doing?
I'm all right. Can you all hear me?
Yes, you clear, Chair.
Okay. I'm struggling a bit with my gadget this morning. Let me see if my video will open. But there's no background left.
No, okay. Chair, you can see through, I think.
Okay, let me just fix it still.
Okay, you've got time, Chair.
Okay.
Recording in progress.
Marcel, can you flag the agenda for us so long, please? Good morning, Marcel. Do we have a quorum? It's 9:30.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members, Minister, and colleagues from the department, as well as colleagues from the committee section. Yes, Chairperson, we can start. We have a quorum. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Marcel. Good morning to all members of the Select Committee on the Health and Social Services. Morning, Minister, the DG, and the department that have joined us, also to our staff members. Welcome to this meeting. This meeting, members, we're going to have on the agenda the briefing by the Department of Health on the budget and the APP for 2022-23. It gives me great pleasure to then also thank the Minister and the DG for joining us in this meeting. We are really looking forward to the engagement on in this meeting this morning. And Minister, thank you for making time to be part of our meeting this morning. Members, we have rescheduled the meeting till 9:30 because the Minister has made an apology that he must join cabinet, but he wants to be part of this meeting. So thank you very much also for the members that have signed in. I won't be long, and I will just ask the members to look on your screen, members. The agenda is in front of us. So I have to do the opening and welcome. We will then go to apologies, and then we will immediately hand over to the minister and his department. And then we will have discussions and responses. Then at 5 to 12, I think we will be finished with the department. And then we will just do our ordinary business, on our committee program and any other business. And by 12 o'clock, this meeting should be finished. So let me then, I know I want also that we have a minute of silence. One of our members has lost a brother in a tragic accident, Member Lee. So can we observe a minute of silence, please? Thank you. On behalf of the Select Committee, we wish to extend our sincere condolences to the Lee family, and we will keep the family and especially our member in our prayers. So, members, on apologies. So, members, it's not Ms. Lee, it's Ms. Lutuli. So my apologies for that to the Lutuli family. We wish to express our sincere condolences, and we will keep the family in our prayer. So members, the apologies that we then have received for this meeting is only that the minister will have to leave us early. And also Ms. Lutuli, who is on bereavement. Is there any other apologies, Marcel?
Chairperson, I have not received any other apologies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I move for the adoption of the agenda, members? Is there... Sorry. Members, can I move for the adoption of the agenda? Can I have a mover, please?
Morning, Chair. It's Ndongeni moving the agenda to be adopted.
Thank you, Member Ndongeni. Can we have a seconder?
Christians, second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christians. Minister, we will hand over to you now. Once again, thank you for making time to be in front of this committee. Thank you. Over to you, Minister Pasqua.
Thank you very much to Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to you. Greetings to the Honorable Members of the Select Committee. Greetings also to what my colleagues, the members of from the department. Honorable Chair, maybe the Office of the Deputy Minister maybe did not submit. Let me table his apology. Deputy Minister Jomo is unable to join us. He is on an official trip, on an official assignment outside the country. So he is unable to join us this morning. But thank you very much for this opportunity. Also, I highly appreciate, accommodating me and the DG because, as we've mentioned, we do have a cabinet commitment. So we also requested from that side to defer the meeting because we are the people who are making presentation, which was supposed to start at 11, but they've also kindly agreed to push it to just after 12. So we will be able to stay until the end of the meeting, and then we will immediately then hop into the next meeting. But thank you very much for that accommodation. We take this opportunity to come in front of you to present the budget and the annual performance plan for 2022-23. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, We're looking forward to 2022-23 as a year where we hopefully will be able to recover most of our programs to be again at full strength in terms of our comprehensive health programs. As we all know, the last 2 years have been, we've been under the pressure of the pandemic, which still remains in our midst, but we are hopeful that, you know, a bit optimistic that this may be the last kicks of this pandemic. So we look at 2022-23 as a more intensive recovery of our programs. In terms of, as you know, a lot of the financial resources, human resources, material in terms of equipment, consumables, have been largely skewed in the last 2 years towards managing the pandemic, which was quite necessary, the kind of interventions which were taken by the government broadly. All of government and also we thank the support of the honourable members from the NCOP, the National Assembly, all of Parliament, but also at other spheres of government, because to reach where we are, where there is a hope now of stability and containment and mitigation to the COVID-19 pandemic, is as a result of the full cooperation with all of us working together. Now, while we are optimistic, we also note the fact that over the last 4 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks, we have been witnessing a spike in the rate of infections of COVID-19 across the country, but largely dominantly starting in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape. But recently, we have seen high numbers also in the other provinces with a rising positivity rate. Before the Easter weekend, we were at the low rate of infection with low positivity rate. We were hovering between, you know, 3 to 5%, sometimes 7%. But over the last 4 weeks, we have been well over 15%. 20%, at times we even touched 30, and there was a day when we even touched 35% positivity. And so it varies from day to day. But the trend so far has been encouraging in the sense that while there has been a rise in the spike of infections, especially in the three provinces, although as I've said, over the last 2 to 3 weeks, we have seen that also spread into other provinces. What has been encouraging is the fact that the rate of severity, which leads to hospitalization, has shown the similar trend as what we saw with the advent of Omicron variant from late November into December, January to February, where we saw a steep rise of infections, but not followed by a similarly steep rise in terms of high levels of severity, leading to hospitalization, leading to people in the ICUs, and also leading to more deaths. So at this stage, we see, even as the numbers have risen, the extent of, there's been an increase in terms of hospitalization, almost double where we were before the Easter weekend. Most of the time, our hospitalization was sitting at 2,000 and below overall COVID patients admitted into both private and public hospitals. But over the last few weeks, and just looking at the figures yesterday and a few days before, we have now crossed the 4,000, so doubled the number of people in the hospital. But it's still not, as compared to more than doubling of the rate of infections, some days reaching up to 9,000, 10,000, and largely between 7 and 9,000 on weekdays. So more than double where we were before the Easter weekend. But on the admissions, ICU, and also the number of deaths, In terms of every reporting day in the last 48 hours, it's not been very dramatic, except situations where there is a backlog in terms of death reporting at some days. But when the NICD does give us that report, as collected from our various hospitals, they do indicate when it's a backlog rather than a recent. So that's the picture on the pandemic side. We are optimistic that 2023 will give us a breathing space so that we could be able to recover. So as we would see from this report of this presentation of the current financial year, our programs will be funded in line with our, not necessarily that everything which we have asked for will be allocated, but we'll see from the presentation that the overall budget allocation is that of a 64.5 billion rand allocated to the national department. But we need to point out outright that 86% of that, as you would see, honorable members, is transfers to provinces to support provinces, which is where most of the activities actually take place. So this would be to support across the board in terms of communicable diseases, such as including containment of the pandemic, including support for vaccination, and also other containment measures and mitigation measures against COVID-19. But in addition to that, the other responsibilities of communicable diseases, the HIV and AIDS, which we lost some bit of ground over the last 2 years. We have been on a recovery during the course of 2021, and that will be continuing in 2022. Tuberculosis as well, we have lost some ground, and also sexually transmitted diseases, and also sexual and reproductive health, maternal and child health. All those programs will be supported by the transfers to provinces. Over and above that, on the human resources side, will continue to support provinces in terms of the various aspects of capacity building. And so that will be part of the allocation. Also additional allocation to make sure that we can employ our interns and community services, especially on the medical interns and community service doctors. Honorable members will be aware that this has been a chronic problem where year after year there is a challenge when medical interns and community service doctors have to be confirmed. So we are pleased to say to you that with the additional allocation this year, our department will be able to look after this young doctor's employment with speed, and there will be certainty before the January when they must start, before January 2023. The other very important aspect, of course, is the infrastructure area. As the members of the, our department, as especially our acting CFO, as he presents, members will see that we are indeed very firm, very seriously focused on health facility rehabilitation, new facilities, upgrading of existing facilities across the board, from primary health clinics, community health centers, hospitals, at the district and regional hospital level, but also with what will also be covered is the starting of also a major project of a Limpopo Academic Hospital, which will also the beginning of that is catered for. So we're looking forward, honorable members, as I give over to the DG and the team to make the presentation, but also a major challenge which we have been dealing with over the last number of years, the depletion of our budget through medical legal claims. Now, this is an area which also we intend to improve in terms of our capacity to manage this and reduce this medical legal claims, because they deplete very important resources. But lastly, also the improvement in the quality of services is what we hope to be focusing on in this particular year. So with that, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, Let me invite the Director General, Dr. Buthelezi, to indicate the team which will make the presentation to this Honorable Select Committee. DG, you can come forward.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, and good morning to the Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and colleagues on the call. Yes, as the Minister has given us the background, we'll have a two-part presentation. The first part, we should be looking at the targets and the programmatic aspect will be led by Ms. Milane Volmarans, who's the Chief Director for Policy and Planning, including Digital Health Systems. And thereafter, she will be followed by Mr. Andre Venter, who is the Acting Chief Financial Officer, who will then put everything in figures. So without wasting time, Honorable Chair, I would like to invite Ms. Milane Volmarans. Thank you very much.
I see I was muted. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and Minister, DG and colleagues. I just want to confirm that I'm audible.
Yes.
And can you see my screen?
Yes, if you can put it on slideshow.
Is this correct, DG?
Yes, you can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to give a summary of the annual performance plan for 2022-23 for the National Department of Health. So just in terms of the context, the National Department of Health, specifically the plan is aligned with the MTSS, the Medium-Term Strategic Framework for 2019-2024. And under the priority education, skills and health. Our vision is a long and healthy life for all South Africans, and we're just recognizing the problem statement that is in the National Development Plan of 2030, which indicates that we have good policy and there's relatively high spending as a proportion of GDP, but services remain fragmented between the public and private sectors. And this remains a focus area. Also, it recognizes that the health system should be patient-focused rather than a disease-focused system. With regards to diagnostics, in terms of the preparation of both the strategic plan and the annual performance plan, which is aligned to the National Development Plan and Sustainable Development Goals, and then the mandate that we have received from the MTSS, which focuses on universal health coverage for all South Africans progressively achieved and all citizens protected from the catastrophic financial impact of seeking healthcare by 2030 through the implementation of the NHI policy, and then the life expectancy of South Africans to be improved to 66.6 years by 2024, and 70 years by 2030. We recognize the NHI Policy Directive of Government, noting the consultations of the NHI Bill led by Parliament. And then there's quite a number of diagnostic documentations that guides the priorities. Just to mention a few, the Presidential Health Summit Compact with its 9 pillars or focus areas. And then the Lancet Quality Commission report and the recommendations by the Health Market Inquiry, as well as the South African Demographic and Health Survey. So in presenting the annual performance plan of the National Department of Health, it focuses on the key mandates and responsibilities of the National Department of Health while monitoring the implementation of critical programs and interventions at a provincial department, with each provincial department having their own annual performance plan. So just to start with program one, which is administration, The purpose of the administration program is to provide support services to the National Department of Health. There are units within Program 1, which includes human resource development and management, labor relations services, information, communication, technology services, property management services, security services, legal services, and supply chain management and financial management services. So with regards to Program 1, the first indicator focuses on financial management, and the target for 2022-23 is an unqualified audit opinion for the 21-22 financial year. The next two indicators then focus on, as ministers also mentioned, the management of medical legal cases. So for 2022-23, the target is the legislation to be developed for the management of medical legal claims in South Africa. And then the further expansion of the case management system that was developed and to be implemented in all the provinces, noting that the Western Cape Department of Health is excluding from this process, given that they have a system in place. And then with regards to the communication unit, focusing on reducing premature mortality due to NCDs, the focus is on having 100 different health promotion messages, and this being published on the National Department of Health social media platforms. The next three indicators focuses on employment equity. And the first one is with regards to 50% of women at SMS level appointed at the National Department of Health. The next one is with regards to youth, and the target is 30% youth appointed at the NDOH. And the third one is 7% of people with disabilities appointed at the National Department of Health according to the equity targets. The next program is Program 2, National Health Insurance. This program focuses on improving access to quality health services through the development and implementation of policies to achieve universal health coverage and health financing reform. For this specific program, the following key indicators is included in the APP. The first one is with regards to the public hearings on the NHI Bill in Parliament, where the participation of the National Department of Health is required. The next is to focus on continuing the program for the chronic medicine dispensing, and this will be increased where an additional 1.3 million, where an additional 700,000 people will receive their medicine, chronic medication, at pickup points in the community. The next indicator is with regards to the establishment of the NHI unit at the National Department of Health, and the target is 70% of funded posts in the NHI organogram to be filled. And the next indicator focuses on the National Department of Health monitoring the availability of medicine in all public health facilities. The target is to increase this by 20 more facilities, public health facilities that's using and supporting on the stock disability system for the department to monitor the availability of medicine in public health facilities. The next program is Program 3, which covers both communicable and non-communicable diseases. It develops and supports the implementation of national policy guidelines, norms and standards, and monitors the target set that is needed for the decrease morbidity and mortality, which is associated with communicable diseases, as well as non-communicable diseases. So the first indicator focuses on HIV, and the country's efforts to reach the 1990 target. In terms of these targets and priorities for this year, the first one is to implement the facilities to provide self-screening for HIV, and the target is 200 public health facilities to offer HIV self-screening, and then also expanding the services of men health services, and those will be piloted in 10 facilities. Then also making the public health facilities accommodated for the youth, and the target is 2,000 primary health facilities with youth zones, which is an increase of an additional 400 public health facilities. Then also the next indicators refers to tuberculosis. So the first target is the drug susceptible TB treatment rate, an increase of 5% for this financial year is the target, from 80% of the previous financial year. The next focus is on reduction of number of drug-susceptible TB deaths, and the indication or the target is to reduce this by 2,500 during the 2022-23 financial year. And then also with regards to additional people to be found and put on to TB treatment, the target is 221,000. 900. The next two indicators focuses on child health. One of the preventative programs with regards to child health diseases is the expanded program on immunization for children. And one of the critical inputs into that program is to have appropriate cold chain capacity that needs to be available. And the target is then for this financial year, and the focus is to do a capacity assessment in all the depots, sub-depots, and 50% of public hospitals, and to provide a report with recommendations to improve the cold chain capacity in these facilities. The National Department of Health also have a program which is called the Side-by-Side Campaign, which is radio shows that focuses on the development of children and then specifically with regards to nutrition in children. And the 36 episodes of the Side-by-Side campaign will be broadcasted on 10 different radio stations. The next is indicator is with regards to the child and youth health. And this is the monitoring function of the department. So the focus is on having quarterly reviews with each one of the provinces to monitor their performance against their set targets, and also then develop remedial actions and determine where the National Department of Health can support provinces towards the achievement of the target set. The next indicator is focusing on maternal and child health and reproductive health, and this is similar quarterly meetings with each one of the provinces to determine their progress against the target set. Then with regards to sexual and reproductive health, there is a program that has been developed, which is an online training module. And the target is for 400 clinicians who have completed one of the sexual and reproductive health modules in terms of the online training. The next three indicators is the target set for the vaccination program. These are very optimistic targets. We do have the vaccines in the country, and we do have the capacity to vaccinate people. So the big determining factor is the demand, so people coming forward for vaccination. In terms of the vaccination program, the targets are 70% of adults 50 years and older, which is vaccinated against COVID-19 with at least one dose. And then 65% of adults 35 to 49 years vaccinated against COVID-19 with at least one dose. And then 60% of young people 12 to 34 years vaccinated against COVID-19 with at least one dose. Apologies. Then the next indicator focuses on schistosomiasis, which is also known as bilharzia. So this is basically in the school health program to work on a plan to include the treatment of bilharzia in the endemic bilharzia endemic districts in the country. Then with regards to malaria, the target is that we have the two targeted sub-districts reporting zero local malaria cases, and the two targeted sub-districts is Tabochweyo in Mbombela and Mpumalanga, and the other one is in KwaZulu-Natal in the King Sechwayo district. And then with regards to, again, with NCDs, so there's a national strategic plan for non-communicable diseases. So during this financial year is to look at the provincial plans and also to look at the monitoring of the implementation of these provincial plans for the treatment and prevention of non-communicable diseases so that we can decrease premature mortality as a result of non-communicable diseases by 10%. The next is also part of non-communicable diseases and focuses on mental health. The first target for 2022-23 is to increase the capacity for state patients to be admitted in designated psychiatric hospitals. And the target is to have 100 new state, increase the capacity with 100 new beds. And then the next one is with regards to the National Mental Health Policy Framework, which will be tabled at the National Health Council for adoption and implementation. Then with regards to part of the quality and safety of care improvements, specifically focusing on the food services policy, the target is that additional 100 hospitals, including the 7 tertiary hospitals, to obtain a 75% and above on the food services policy assessment. And the last indicator is with regards to a strategy to be developed or updated for the prevention and control of obesity in South Africa and published accordingly. This indicator requires extensive external consultation and collaboration. Okay. The next program is Program 4. Primary healthcare services. This is the purpose of this program is to develop and oversee the implementation of legislation, policies, and systems, norms, and standards to ensure a uniform, well-functioning district health system, including emergencies and environmental health services. The first group of indicators focuses on district management or the district health management. The department had a district health system policy framework, which was implemented during the period 2014 to 2019. For this year, there needs to be an evaluation on the level of implementation of this district health system policy framework, and then also making recommendations in terms of the the further development of the framework. The next indicator focuses on the district health management officers. A guideline for district health management officers has been developed, and this will be tested in 18 identified health districts. The next two indicators focus on community-based services, and this is the expansion of the ward-based primary health care outreach teams from 1,250 in the previous financial year. 2,700 is the target for the 2022-23 financial year. Then community health workers plays an essential and critical role in finding and identifying patients that that is not coming and returning back for treatment on TB and HIV. And the target is to work on an additional 100,000 individuals to be reintroduced into the health system and receive their treatment accordingly. The next group of indicators focuses on environmental health services. And the first one is with regards to the ports of entry. And the target for the 2022-23 financial year is 25 ports of entry compliant with the international health regulations based on the self-assessments that will be done. And then also the next one is 26. It's the total for both metropolitan and district municipalities assessed for compliance to the national environmental health norms and standards. The last indicator for program four is in relation to emergency medical services, and specifically looking at the assessment for the compliance with the emergency medical service regulations that was published for implementation. We're now moving to program five. This is the program that focuses on hospital services as well as infrastructure. So the first group of three indicators focuses, or the first indicator, apologies, focuses on the regulations relating to the designation and classification of hospitals. This will be reviewed and published for comment. Then the next indicators focus on infrastructure, and for this purpose, 40 facilities to be constructed or revitalized according to the user asset management plan, and this is specifically for primary health care facilities. And the next one is with regards to hospitals. 21 hospitals to be either constructed or revitalized according to the infrastructure program management plans and the assessments that must be done accordingly. The next indicator focuses on maintenance plans. So 120 public health facilities. This includes clinics, hospitals, nursing colleges, EMS base stations to be maintained or repaired and or refurbished according to the maintenance plans assessed. The details of the facilities that's targeted for these three infrastructure indicators in terms of the specific facilities with their geospatial referencing is in the APP on page 91 to 93. The last program is program six, which focuses on health systems governance and includes planning, monitoring and evaluation, the human resources for health management, and then also with regards to the oversight of public entities and statutory professional councils and also quality assurance. So So the first indicators focus on the governance focus with regards to the entities of the National Department of Health as well. And the second one focuses on the statutory health professional councils. So the first one is to, in terms of the boards to be appointed, because their term is expiring for the South African Medical Research Council and the Office of Health Standard Compliance. And the next one is to have biannual governance reports produced for all the statutory health professional councils, as well as the public entities of the National Department of Health. With regards to nursing and improving the nursing skills, the focus is on 9 nursing colleges that will be supported by the National Department of Health to develop their training plans for nurse stroke midwife specialists. With regards to monitoring and evaluation, so according to the National Health Act, the National Department of Health on an annual basis need to publish a revised set of health research priorities. So this is again a target for 2022-23. And then also for this financial year is the development of performance dashboards for both at the national, provincial, and at the district level, so that the performance on critical identified indicators, clinical indicators, can be monitored at all levels of the health system. With regards to quality improvement, the department has implemented the quality learning program. So the focus is, or the quality improvement plan, the focus is 100 primary healthcare facilities and 80 hospitals implementing the National Health Quality Improvement Program. Also continuing with the ideal clinic, so an increase in 100 primary healthcare facilities that qualify as ideal clinics, so 100 more is the target for the 2022-23 financial year. The last two indicators focuses on human resources for health. And the first is with regards to the review of the community service policy. So during the 2022-23 financial year, the community service policy for key health professionals will be reviewed, and a report with recommendations will be finalized and presented to the Technical Advisory Committee of the National Health Council. And then the National Department of Health has developed a human resources information system, which is a system that could be used for the purposes of human resources for health planning. And this system needs to be expanded in terms of their use to inform human resources for health planning and the utilization of this to further expand this will be the focus for this financial year. Thank you. I will now hand over to the acting CFO, Mr. André Venters.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister and DG. I just want to hear whether I'm audible.
Yes, you are, Andras.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Ms. Wolmerans will assist me by projecting the slides. Honourable Chair, when we look at the budget allocation for the health sector, the budget is sitting around 300 billion rands for the 22-23 financial year. When we are looking at the indicative baseline allocations established in the 21 MTF, and when that is compared to the budget allocation for the 22-23 financial year for the health sector as a whole, there is an increase of 6.8%. The National Department of Health share of the health sector budget amounts to 64.5 billion rands, of which 56.2 billion rand is for transfers to the provincial health departments through the conditional grants. This is actually where the actual expenditure will take place and recorded, because that is where service delivery is taking place and the expenditure will realize at provincial level. In the 22-23 budget, National Treasury has also earmarked funds for specific purposes. And if we are adding this to the conditional grants, Chairperson, 97.8% of the National Department of Health budget is ring-fenced. I will give more details when we are getting to those specific programs where the earmarkings and the conditional grants are allocated. Chair, currently on the screen is just a summary of the programs. My apology, Melanie, just one back. Is a allocation for programs. We have our six programs, Chair, and in total we have for the voted funds, which is at the discretion of the department to use that for its operations, and where the department can decide on possible shifting of those funds during the course of the financial year, amounts to 1.379 billion rands. As indicated, the total amount earmarked by National Treasury for the department is 4.6, almost 4.7 billion rands. And then we are sitting with the 56.2 billion rands for the conditional grants. We have 2.2 billion rands for indirect conditional grants sitting at the national department, where the national department is are managing those grants. And in total, Chair, 64.5 billion rand has been appropriated for the National Department of Health in the 22-23 financial year. The next slide is giving a breakdown for economical classification, indicating what portion of the budget is going to compensation of employees, goods and services, the transfers, and the capital expenditure that we will be incurring in the course of this financial year. Here you will see that the majority of the budget is sitting in transfer payments with a total of 58.3 billion rands that is being transferred out of the National Department of Health's budget. Chair, if I then can go into the next slide, just giving a few reasons for the increases and variances on the budget allocation. On compensation of employees, our COE ceiling has been reduced by 7%, and that is mainly due to the shifting of the forensic chemistry laboratories from the department's core budget to the NHLS. That change and shifting took effect on the 1st of April 2022. Then on our goods and services budget, the allocation for the COVID-19 was reduced by 52%. From 21-22 financial year. And Chair, that moved down from 4.3 billion rands to 2.1 billion rands. And that mainly is linked to the procurement of vaccines. We had a fairly large budget in the 21-22 financial year when the vaccination program was introduced and we had to procure vaccines. Allocation from the National Health Insurance indirect grant was reallocated to the National Health Insurance and Human Resource Training grants, and those are flowing then to the provincial health departments. The next slide will also indicate the transfers which has been effected. Next slide, Melanie. So just one back, please. The transfers are increasing the conditional grant allocations for the National Health Insurance as well as the human resource grants is coming from the reallocation of the funds that was taken from the indirect grant which is managed by the national department. Then an additional amount of 758 million rand was also allocated to conditional grants and the human resource training grant. For cash gratuities, and that is to to recognize and acknowledge the hard work that has been done by our health staff members during the COVID-19 pandemic. And then under purchases of capital assets, Chair, the capital funds of the for the health facility revitalization and national health insurance indirect grants were increased by 19%. From 1.1 to 1.3 billion rand and 65% from 19 million to 53 million rand for the 21 from the 21-22 financial year to 22-23 financial year. Chair, if I can then go into the programs, program one is purely there for the central services that we are rendering from program one to the department in achieving the APP. There we have our corporate services, we have our financial management services, we have our management services, but also under program one, Chair, we have our activity around the medico-legal committees and the function. Chair, the funding that is sitting here is basically for the case management system, which we are managing from the National Department of Health side. There is also a need to beef up the funding for this specific function to ensure that we do get a grip on the medical legal claims, which is really eroding our budget at provincial level, Chair. Then we also have an earmarked allocation by National Treasury for the SICA program. That is, should actually be renamed because this is for provincial support to our provinces, where we are providing assistance with regard to financial management and supply chain practices, but also then to ensure that we support provinces in improving the audit outcomes. To ensure that we can account for all the budgets that we have allocated, but also spend our monies in a very responsible manner, Chair. The next slide is just presenting, and that, Chair, you will find on each and every of the programs. It's just a breakdown of how that allocation of 781 million rands will be allocated in according to voted funds, per economical classification, compensation of employees, goods and services, transfer payments, and then the capital assets, and which portion of the 781 million rand is ring-fenced and earmarked, and as indicated, it's for medical legal and improvement and support to provincial for the financial outcomes, and that is sitting under our goods and services budget. Chair, if we're going to program two, the National Health Insurance program, I think most important here, the total allocation to the program is 1.5 billion rands, of which 65.9 million rands is allocated at for the national department and the voted funds. Earmarked funds, Chair, once again, Treasury has ring-fenced these funds and it can only be used for this intended purpose. Of which 10 million rand is going into the electronic medicine stock system, which is very critical to our CCMDD program. And then we are sitting with a 41 million rand for the interim fund, the NHI interim fund. And this is purely, Chairperson, to ensure that we do develop and start creating the setting the scene for the NHI to ensure that we can start preparing for the fund when the necessary legislation has been passed. Then, Chair, the very first conditional grant, we are sitting with the NHI direct grant, and these funds, 693 million rand, will flow to provinces. And the main purpose of these funds that's going, Chair, is to expand the healthcare service benefits through strategic purchasing of services for health care providers. And then we are sitting with 700 million rands at the national department, Chair, And as I've indicated, these funds are also ring fenced, and they are purely there to start preparing for the implementation of the NHI as well, for aspects such as design of benefits and pricing, provider accreditation, the management of health products procurement, the digital information systems that we will require to ensure that we do have a successful NHI in South Africa, Chair. The next slide, Chair, is also then just the pitching once again how the total amount of 1.5 billion rand is spread across the economical classification. More importantly here to note the amount of the 693 million rand for the direct conditional grants that will be flowing to provinces. And Chair, I will in a later slide give the breakdown of what portion will flow to the various provinces in this grant. And then the indirect grant, as I've indicated, that is sitting at the national department and under the management of the national department, Chair. Program three, Chair, the total budget allocation that we have is 26.9 billion rands, of which 170 million rands is for the national department. Earmarked funds, once again, Chair, very strict. National Treasury is not budging. They are not granting any permissions to utilize these fundings for any other purpose, except for what it has been budgeted for. There we have our NGOs that is getting transfers from the department based on business plans submitted by them to ensure that they can strengthen and support the department on the various activities that is undertaken in the area of communicable and non-communicable diseases, Chair. Chair, we have a COVID allocation for 2.1 billion rands. That is mainly a provision that has been made for additional vaccines. Should we require additional vaccines that we need to procure in the current financial year, Treasury has allocated an amount for the procurement of the vaccines to 2.1 billion rands. Then we have the elimination of malaria, Chair, which is still a very critical activity that the department is driving. And then we have the chronic disease prevention and health promotion, the 48 million rand, Chair, which we generally call the sugar tax. And that is an allocation that we are getting from the sugar tax, which we then are plowing back into health promotion activities and ensure that we do promote healthy lifestyles in South Africa. Chair, importantly, if I get to the conditional grants, the previous year's conditional grant has been renamed, Chair, and now the name will be the District Health Programs Grant. There are two components in this grant. The one component is for the HIV and AIDS component, amounting to 24.13 billion rands. Which is sitting in Program 3. And then there's a second component, the district health component, which is sitting in Program 4, Chair. And I will get to that when we get to Program 4. But mainly, Chair, as in the past, the allocation for the health component or HIV component under the district health programs grant is for the HIV to ensure that we develop and implement effective response to HIV and AIDS and to enable the health sector to develop and implement effective responses to TB, which is still very, very important, and to ensure that there's provision for quality community outreach services through ward-based primary health care programs, and to improve the ward-based primary healthcare programs by harmonizing the standardizing services and strengthening performance and monitor. Chair. So on the next slide, once again, it's just the pitching, how it is spread across the economic classifications. Chair, if we go into program four, primary healthcare services. As mentioned, in total, the allocation is 5.1 billion rands, of which 4.8 billion rands is the second component of the district health programs grant, sitting at 4.88 billion rands, Chair. And once again, this is mainly on the elimination of malaria, the HPV vaccinations for our school girls program that is covered through these allocations. And then also we have a portion there for the administration of the COVID-19 vaccination program, Chair. There is still activities taking place around the vaccination, which needs to be covered from the provincial budget allocations, and provision for that has been made in the district health component of the 4.88 billion rands. Chair, the next slide is once again just depicting the allocation according to the economical classifications. Important there to know that the 4.8 billion rands is sitting under conditional grants, and that will be transferred out to the provinces, and I will give details in a later slide what portion will go to which province. Chair, program five, our hospital services program, our hospital systems program. Here is also a very critical allocation, which Minister alluded to, of which I will give the detail. 6.8 billion rands, Chair, has been allocated for conditional grants for our health facilities revitalization grant. It is critical that we do speed up the revitalization, and Treasury is really serious in making sure that we get adequate funding so that we can continue with that program, Chair. That is a direct grant that will be flowing to the provinces. The other component, which is also sitting under the indirect grant, which is also linked to the NHI indirect grant, Chair, amounts in total to 1.5 billion rands, of which 498 million rands is specifically allocated for Limpopo Academic Hospital. Once again, it's with very much happiness that we did receive this allocation, and that we can indeed make progress in commencing with the Limpopo Academic Hospital in the current financial year. Then we also have, once again, 1 billion rands, Chair, for our health facilities that's linked to the NHI, where we need to make sure that we are ready for the NHI and that all of those facilities do meet the minimum requirements as we've outlined for the NHI, Chair. So, Chair, in total, there's also the National Tertiary Services Grant of 14.3 billion rands, the Schedule 4 grant, which is going to specific provinces, which will then take up the total conditional grants for this program up to 21 billion rands, which is transferred out to provinces. The next slide is once again just giving the allocations, and unfortunately this is how the budgets are working, and we have to do it a breakdown per economical classification, because that is how the reporting and consolidations of our financial information is taking place, and that's international standard. So, Chair, the conditional grant is sitting at 21 billion rands, the indirect grants at 1.5 billion rands, and then the total amount for the program is sitting at 22.6 billion rands, Chair. Program six, Chair, our health systems, governance and human resources, also a very important program, Chair, because here is where our big expenditure is taking place in terms of the health professionals and training development grant. So Minister also alluded to that there has been an increase in this grant, and I've also indicated that there was a shifting from the NHI indirect grant to this grant as well, to make provision for our interns and ensure that we can accommodate and place them and that there is sufficient funding for it. So Chair, in total, the grant amounts to 5.4 billion rand, and that is also once again transferred out to the provinces. Chair, then we have earmarks, and this is the larger or the biggest portion that's been earmarked is 1.9 billion rands, of which 15 million is sitting in our health information system area for the development of our digital systems that we will have to have ready and to ensure that we have proper monitoring systems in place to monitor performance of our programs, Chair. Then there's a budget allocation of 17 million rands to health system stress. And then we have our public entities, Chair. We still have to support our public entities to make sure that they do have a core functioning and to ensure that service delivery and that they meet the requirements as set out in the various pieces of legislation. So we have 157 million going over to the Office of Health Standards Compliance. The NHLS, 772 million rands, and as I've indicated, the forensic chemistry laboratories has been moved to the NHLS with effect from the 1st of April 2022. The MRC, our Research Council, receiving a 780 million rands from the National Department, and SAPRA receiving 149 million rands, Chair. Then we have the Traditional Health Practitioners Council. We also realize that this is an important activity that needs to get momentum. There is definitely a need for increase in the budget allocation for this, and we will once again raise this with National Treasury in the upcoming budget cycle, Chair. And then we have our CCOD MBOD program, Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Diseases, sitting at 63 million rands. This is a very small, minute amount that we are making available to the fund, because if you look at the total turnover of the Compensation Commissioner Fund, it's much, much higher than that what we are contributing here. But at least, Chair, what we are contributing is to ensure that those pensioners that is in the system do get their pensions, and that we can ensure that the Compensation Commissioner is executing its mandates as required by the Act. In total, Chair, 7.5 billion rands has been allocated to Program 6. And once again, on the next slide, I'm just sharing what is the breakdown of those in terms of the economical classifications. Chair, as indicated, I will also quickly run through, because this is also very important, just for the members of the Select Committee to have a feel of how much of the conditional grants is going to the various provinces. So on the National Tertiary Services Grant, Chair, out of the 14.3 billion rands, Western Cape will get the 3.4 billion rands, Northwest 420 going to the Western Cape, Northern Cape, apology, Mpumalanga 145, Limpopo 481, KZN 2 billion rands, Gauteng 5 billion rands, Free State 1.2, and the Eastern Cape is receiving 1.1 billion rands for the National Tertiary Services Grant. Chair, this has been taken up in the DORA and can definitely not be changed. It's not the easy process to change this. And when it comes to the NTSG grant, Schedule 4 grants, we cannot withhold any of those funds. Then we are getting to our Schedule 5 grants, Chair, and important here is just to give the split on the new district health grant, the district health component totaling to for HIV, totaling to the 24.13 billion rands, My apology, Chair, I see there's a typo. It should have been switched around. The district health component is sitting at 4.8 billion rands, and the HIV component is sitting at the 24.1 billion rands, Chair. In total, the allocation for this grant is 29 billion rands, Chair. And like I've indicated, this is the first year that there's a split in this grant, and these funds will be transferred such to the various provinces. Our next grant, Chair, is the next one is the revitalization. Chair, Minister indicated that we need to move on our infrastructure. This is critical for the health sector to refurbish, do maintenance of our health facilities. And in this, we have been receiving 6.7 billion rands. Eastern Cape is getting 750 million rands, Free State 642. Gauteng is getting just over a billion rands, KZN 1.3, almost 1.4 billion rands, Limpopo 600 million, Mpumalanga 463, Northern Cape 444, Northwest 652, and Western Cape 796 million rands. Chair, we should remember that this is over and above the provision that was already made through equitable share at provincial level. So in essence, this is a top up on the funding that's already sitting at provincial level. So another 6.7 billion rands will be flowing to provinces and ensuring that we take this seriously and ensure that our health facilities receive the necessary maintenance and refurbishment as required. The next grant, Chair, is our human resource and training grant. Most importantly, it's 5.4 billion rands that will be flowing to the provinces. Built into this grant, Chair, as indicated, is provision for some of the vaccination activities that's still taking place at provincial level to ensure that those are not being taken from the normal operational budgets, and the provision was made for that, as well as the additional funding that we've received for the placement of our interns and medical concerns, Chair. In total, 5.4 billion rands, of which Gauteng is receiving 1.8 billion rands. Free State is receiving 264. Eastern Cape 578. The KZN 754. Limpopo 372, Mpumalanga 274, Northern Cape 155, Northwest 277, and Western Cape 899, rounded to 900 million rand, Chair. And then the last grant, Chair, if I'm not mistaken, is the National Health Insurance Grant. Like I've indicated, Chair, that the main purpose of the National Health Insurance Grant is to ensure that we expand the healthcare services through strategic purchasing of services, but also to ensure that we have our infrastructure upgrades across the country, that we are contracting private primary healthcare doctors and acquiring of oncology services and also mental health. So in total, it is 693 million rands that will be flowing to provinces, Chair, and the allocation is there per province, and we will be monitoring this also through our interactions with the provincial health departments to ensure that these funds are indeed utilized for intended purposes, as well as in line with the business plans which have been submitted to obtain these fundings. Chair, that concludes then the budget portion of the APP, and I do wish to express my appreciation for the opportunity that we had to make the budget presentation to the Select Committee. Thank you, Chair, and I'm handing back to the Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Venter. DG, is your presentation finished? Can I move over to the members?
I don't know where the DG okay. Now you can come through.
Yes. No, thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, Chair. That will be all from our side, and we thank the members for giving us an ear, and we'll be ready to engage. I will hand back to my minister. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bachelor.
No, thanks, Chair. That's it from our side. We're ready to engage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, sorry, before that, let me first thank the minister and the DG and the team for their very brief and thorough presentation that we received this morning. Minister, from my side, I just have a few questions. Currently in the news, the Department of Health is getting very bad reflection on the Charlotte Mackay Hospital. If you can maybe give us an update on where we are. And then also the other one is this issue that has started in the country, and some people say we mustn't look into it as xenophobia, but we must look into it that they are putting South Africans first. Is the, I don't know if I must call it a campaign or what I must call it, is the issue of foreign nationals that are being treated in our hospitals. If the minister maybe can give us an update, and also why we in this country are doing this to also accommodate foreign nationals when it comes to health services, and also what the impacts are on the services rendered by the health department to South Africans, and how we measure it. I think it will be very interesting, Minister, because at the moment there is so many outrages outside in the country, not only from political parties, but also from community members. So it will be very interesting if the minister can brief us about how and why, especially when it comes to health issues. I think that will be from my side. Then I've got Member Maleka and Member Christian. So, Member Maleka, I will hand over to you, and after you, it will be Member Christians. If there's any other members who's got questions, I will ask you to raise your hand. I see Member Dongeni after that. But thank you very much. Member Maleka, it's over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the Minister and the Department, and members and the staff, and welcome the presentation by the department. Chairperson, I want to check, there is a significant reduction of compensation of employees. The department should please explain the implication of this reduction. And also there are still cases of interns in community services, doctors not being placed. Tell me, Asli, what are the reasons for this, and will the increases in this grant allocation assist to prevent such issues, Chairperson? Maybe I will come back. Let me give other members a chance because of the time.
Thank you, Member Maleka. We will move to Member Christian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have a few questions, and I hope the department will bear with me. Thank you for the presentation. It was really enlightening. My first questioning is around the medical interns and community service doctors. Now, it has been reported that around 1 billion rand has been allocated every year for the medium term and for the medical interns and community service doctors posts. Now, recently in the media, it has been reported that some of these people's contracts have been suspended or terminated. Now, this is very concerning, considering that current stats show that there is only one doctor for every 1,000 patients. So it's almost impossible to grasp that our interns and community service personnel are now, their services are now being, their contracts are being terminated. So I would like to know from the department, what is the reason for this? And how will the department assist this cohort of medical interns and community service professionals whose contracts have now been terminated? Those who have not completed their contracts, how will they assist them to get back into completing their service timelessly? What was the reason for the termination? Was it with regards to finances? What was the reason for it? And will this grant allocations now prevent this from happening in the future? And then with regard to Program 3, we've also seen media reports, very, very disturbing media reports of children suffering from severe malnutrition in the country, and sadly, even some children dying of hunger. So I would like to know from the Department of Health, what is the strategy of the department to combating the severe acute malnutrition? How do they identify it early when mothers come to the clinics with their children and the children are showing severe cases of malnutrition? How is this combated? How are provinces being assisted at clinics to assist? And furthermore, what is the department's cross-sectional approach with departments such as social development, basic education, and others? Is there a cross-sectional approach or not? And then with regard to Program 6, it is still disturbing that, you know, that we are still receiving reports that the forensic chemistry laboratories are still battling with backlogs. And every time we come to our meetings, we get reports on the backlog, but it doesn't seem as if the department is winning the battle in actually getting those backlogs alleviated. Is there a time frame associated? Can the department give us a time frame when those backlogs will actually be caught up with? And then I also want to come in where the chairperson has requested a report on the fire at the Charlotte Maseka Hospital. You know, there have been reports that the cancer treatments have been really now shifted into the background. So how are those patients being assisted? And what is the time frame then for the restoration of the services in that hospital? And then with regard to hospital personnel and safety in all our provinces, there's recently been many reports. There's been a shooting in a hospital recently where people have lost their lives. And recently also a ambulance has been hijacked and robbed of equipment of more than 300,000 rand. Has the department got any way forward in securing or in assisting our medical personnel when they are on the roads and in hospitals? How will the department ensure that our medical personnel remain safe when they are busy working? My last two questions, oncology and mental health, seem to be under-supported in terms of the budget. That is particularly concerning. Oncology during the pandemic has also been put into the background because patients have not been able to get their treatment. So it is rather concerning that oncology's budget has been decreased. How will this affect oncology patients? Will targets be reached? In other words, will all these oncology patients actually receive the treatment they need to receive to save their lives, considering that the budget has been decreased? And then lastly, what is the update on the registrar posts at hospitals? Will they be filled? Is the budget sufficient? And how soon will they be filled? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christians, for all great questions. Member Dongeni, your turn.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, Chair. Morning, Minister. Officials from the department, our staff. Morning. Chair, my question is, the department should report the current state of its accommodation and its move from the head office, Civitas. Have all workers' database and equipment been moved and properly accommodated? The second one, the department should report on the state of medico-legal management system and its effectiveness. What is the definition of property payment and how is it different to lease the payment? Is different to lease payments? Sorry, Chair, about that. Ne? The other one is, what has the department learned from the COVID pandemic and how will this learning be incorporated in the running of the department and the design of the NHI in particular? Please, the department update the committee on the process of medical aid beneficiaries being registered on the HPRS. And the department claims that more than 50 million people are registered on its HPRS system. How was this achieved? Was there a medical campaign? Did the department work with the Department of Home Affairs? Did it acquire a database? Is it a popular complaint? Provided Pam with an update. Can you please update us with the spending of the NHI grant? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Dongeni. I see Member Baha.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, let's welcome the presentation by the department. And I think members have raised questions on certain areas, but I think for me there's only two issues that I want to talk to. One, there's been coverage in the media, and I think the minister somehow did touch on this also in the same media space where there's doctors and nurses planning to leave the country and go ply their trades elsewhere. I want to check, Chairperson, what are the reasons for that to be something that we are faced with, and probably what is the department planning to do to ensure that it doesn't happen? Secondly, Chairperson, there are areas where numbers are growing in terms of COVID-19. And I know that at some point we were thinking that this is almost over, and yet now we see growth in numbers. What could be the reason for that? And also, what is the department planning to do to ensure that the country does not get back to where it was in terms of being closed and that people are able to work? And so, Chairperson, those are the only two questions that I wanted to raise. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Baha. Then one issue that I forgot to raise, Minister, is also the issue of the KZN floods and how the department went out and assisted. I really must applaud the department and also the minister, deputy minister, and the MEC of Health in KZN. But I really need to know, Minister, how will we really make sure that the services in KZN are not so severely interrupted, especially when we look at our oncology patients, our TB, HIV, AIDS patients. And also, I want to add my voice to the issue that Member Christian raised about the malnutrition and how the Department of Health and Social Services are working together on that one. Then the issue that the other issue was in the Gauteng Health Department, Minister, can you also enlighten us how the National Department of Health intervened and assisted the Gauteng Department of Health with regards to their budget constraints and also the so-called retrenchment of staff members. It will be very, I think, very good if we can see how you intervened and what we can looking forward to in assisting the Gauteng Health Department. Thank you for that, Minister and DG. I don't see any other hands. If Member Maleka, do you have another question that you want to add before I hand over?
Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to take in the issue of oncology and mental health services. I once again sidelined in this budget with funding for these services allocated to the broader NHI grant. I want to check government has not indicated how much money specific for this crucial and currently under-supported services will be protected. How much has been allocated for oncology and mental health services? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Maleka. Minister, I will back you for and members, if you've got follow-up questions, if time will allow us, I will allow you follow-up questions, but very brief. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the honourable members. I'll take some of the questions and then I'll ask the DG and the team to deal with the others. Some of them I'll just also make some introductory remarks and then ask them to give some addition. Chair, from your side, on the Charlotte Matake Academic, Johannesburg Academic Hospital, I think Honorable Christians also added a question on that. Yeah, there's something about Charlotte Matake. We know that there was a fire at the hospital in April last year. Now, it took some time for between the Gauteng Health Department and the Department of Infrastructure Development in Gauteng to really get to grips with the repairs as a result of the fire. There were some matters which took some time, the assessment and ultimately some interventions. Also, between the Gauteng Department of Health and the Johannesburg Metro, the Fire and Safety Division of the Metro, which helped to give a go-ahead for a building to be declared safe. So, but finally, there were agreements in terms of the work which needed to be done, especially in terms of further prevention of any injuries in case of future fires. But because the process was taking long and also the Premier also was having concern about the Department of Infrastructure in the province, its planning and also the costs which they were coming forward to say the repairs would cost. He then asked the National Department for us to come in and assist together with the Development Bank of Southern Africa, the DBSA, because we already had a particular relationship with the DBSA as a project manager on a number of infrastructure projects. As you would see from the presentation, especially on our NHI indirect grant, where we actually implement certain upgrades and construction of facilities at the NHI district, the pilot district. So because of that relationship, we agreed with the Premier that we can come in and try and fast track the intervention. But by then already, there was already an agreement with the Solidarity Fund, which was, as you honorable members will remember, we have all contributed to the Solidarity Fund as a result of the initiative by the president of this fund to mobilize society to contribute towards the mitigation against COVID. So the Solidarity Fund also came on board and provided funding for the initial work on the rehabilitation of the Charlotte McGregor Hospital. So after an agreement was reached with the Premier and the MEC and the department that the provincial Department of Infrastructure will hand over the rehabilitation project of the hospital to our infrastructure team working with the DBSA. Our team then working with also the Solidarity Fund were able to accelerate the first part of that rehabilitation, which resulted in completion of the accident and emergency unit being completely compliant with all safety and fire requirements, well refurbished, and we're able to recommission that accident and emergency section of the Charlotte McGregor. But let me just hasten to say, therefore, that even as this is happening, so there's a program in terms of the complete compliance of the hospital in terms of fire and safety, including then the repair of the sections which were damaged by the fire. But we must hasten to mention that even though the hospital is not functioning at 100%, progressively a number of sections of the hospital have been able to return to functionality. Some of those still have to progressively be refurbished in terms of 100% compliance with the fire and safety requirements. The hospital is currently functioning at about 75% of capacity at various sections, including the oncology division, which Honorable Christian asked about. So that section is actually functioning, not at full capacity, but services have been restored in as far as the oncology services are concerned. So where things stand now is that our department, our infrastructure division has now been handed over the project and contracted the Development Bank of Southern Africa as a project manager. The whole project of the full rehabilitation of the hospital has been costed and a program has been developed. And we've been able, the team has been able to reduce the timelines in terms of where the projection which was there was looking at quite far off, around 2026, 2027, in terms of completion of the rehabilitation. But with the program which the team has now developed, the hospital should be completed to be fully functional by the end of 2023. November going into December maximum, the whole rehabilitation of the Charlotte McGregor Hospital will be completed. So that will reduce a lot of pressure on the other neighboring hospitals, like the Chris Hani Baragwanath, the Helen Joseph Hospital, which are now under extreme pressure. Chair, in terms of your second matter, which you raised about the impact of our health facilities providing services for foreign nationals, it's a very complex matter in the sense that we do follow guidance from Department of Home Affairs in terms of international commitments, which South Africa are a signatory to, in terms of refugees and asylum seekers, who in terms of the international conventions are entitled to services once they've been registered as refugees and asylum seekers. So that's not really the major issue which is causing a lot of stress in a number of our facilities. What is causing a lot of pressure is undocumented migrants, also in many cases, not even undocumented migrants who are resident in the country. Some of it is in terms of that problem, but also in a number of our health facilities, there is clear evidence where people from our neighboring countries come specifically to come and receive health services. And this is more remarkably, you know, putting a lot of pressure on maternity services, where on a regular basis, many of our hospitals in the Tshwane district, in the Johannesburg district, Ekurhuleni, and if you go even into the Limpopo area, you find the situation where in some of the hospitals, up to some of them 40%, in some hospitals they've even put the figure at 60% of deliveries which are happening of mothers who are delivering babies there being undocumented. And the trend which have been established is that they come in as an advanced labor, on advanced pregnancy, and come to seek, you know, almost towards getting into labor. And then they have to be attended to. Now, part of the complication is that they have not been booked, so they have not attended any antenatal services. So they don't have any records. And they, and as a result, a number of complications at the labor wards are as a result of many of these women who come in have never been seen before. They don't have any records. They have never attended antenatal, and they just arrived. And they don't even have proper documents, but they have to be attended. So I have asked our team working with the provinces to really just, rather than just receive anecdotal reports, to do a formal assessment so that we can do a proper study and get proper records so that we can be able to share with the honorable members. In terms of then what is to be done, there has been suggestions that maybe in these cases, the governments and embassies of those citizens, of their countries who come here at the emergency, especially as I say, the dominant one is the labor ward deliveries. There's been suggestions that maybe those embassies should then be given the records so that they can, the bill, so that they should pay for those services. But that's a matter which is, I believe, above ourselves as health department. It's a matter which once we have done a proper study, we may have to then present to cabinet maybe for consideration of what is to be done. So that is the situation. On the other matters, DG, I think I'm going to ask you to allocate colleagues who can be able to respond in terms of the other matters, the reduction of compensation, the issues around intents and comms, who have not been placed timeously. And also, I think in this regard, there was also a mention that some of them have been terminated. I suspect from Honorable Christian, I think I can just mention there that We have indicated that we did request to Treasury for additional funding, because the normal situation is that in each province, in terms of intention, there are particular hospitals which are graded by the Health Professions Council, because internship is part of a requirement for training. So the Health Professions Council designates certain hospitals as being suitable for training of interns, because there must be supervision so that they can be able to acquire certain practical skills. So there are hospitals which are then graded as being suitable for internship training, and then they're allocated according to their capacity in terms of capacity to supervise a number of senior doctors, specialists, and so on, who are there who can supervise. Then a certain number of accredited internship posts will be allocated based on the capacity as assessed by the Health Professions Council. And then it's up to the province then to create those internship posts and then budget for them. So that's really the normal practice. But with the cut of budgets and reduction of compensation budgets, provinces have not been able to cope. In many cases, the HPCSA will assess that the hospital has a capacity for a certain number of internship posts, which can then be created by the province. The posts will be created, but if, let's say, maybe there are 10 internship posts in a hospital, and the province will then come back to say, we can only find 6 out of the 10. We are not, even though the full number accredited by the Health Professions Council is 10 posts, we only have enough budget for 6. And then, but in terms of the demand for posts, as determined by the number of medical graduates, you find that we need the entire 10 posts which have been accredited by the Health Professions Council. So in order to cover that deficit, we then approached National Treasury, because it was becoming a perennial problem every year. So that's when the additional funds were allocated. But this is not for long term. The Treasury did say to us, this is only for 3 financial years, but at least as we do some further planning, that will keep us, you know, more stable in terms of the employment of interns and community service doctors. Those who have completed internship, 2-year internship, we have to do 1 year of community service. The difficulty there, it's actually not the post funding currently for the post of interns and community service. It is because once they finish the community service, now as full-fledged medical officers, there are no more sort of in terms of statutory requirements of training. So the difficulty becomes where, when they are now fully qualified and have finished internship and community service, the provinces are not able to retain them. That's why I'm sure what Honorable Christian is referring to is that kind of a situation. But DG, I hope you've also noted all the matters. Honorable Christian did ask a number of questions. Malnutrition, forensic chemistry laboratory. I think I've dealt with the Charlotte Mateke Hospital, but if you need to add on that, security, the oncology budget, the registrar post from Honorable Ndongeni, your movement from Civitas to AP Kuma building. So DG, can I refer to you now just to allocate from yourself and the other colleagues so that you can deal with the remaining matters? Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. And once more, thanks to the chair and the members. We will allocate the questions as follows. Dr. Chris will come in and deal with the issues around the COVID pandemic, the HPRS, the POPIA, and all the NHI-related questions. And I'd also request him to deal with the plans in terms of community service, interns. Minister has covered that, but he can just add on that and deal with those. And then I'll request Mayor Valerie Rennie to deal with the issue of the medico-legal cases, the system, the issue of the relocation from Civitas to Dr. A.B. Kuma building, and also the general issue of security in the facilities. And then I'd request again, Dr. Chris, if you can touch on the oncology and the mental health allocations that came from Honorable Member Maleka, but also from Honorable Member Crystal as well, that was raised. You will also touch on the issue of the registrar post. And then I will request the CFO to deal with the issue. There are some explanations that came up in terms of what is the difference between property payments and also the leasing, but just talk on the whole issue of the effect of the budget cuts on the compensation of employee and the other budget related issues. If we've been able to assist Gauteng province as national, the CFO will deal with that. So I'll request Dr. Crisp to start, followed by Valerie Rennie, then followed by the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, and colleagues and members of the media. Thanks very much. So let me try and tackle the questions that the DG asked me to. The question about COVID, this is a very vexed pandemic with lots of changing environments all the time. We don't fully understand it. We've never had a pandemic like this. And we've never had to manage the details of a changing variant in as much in the way that we've had to deal with them now. So what we do know is that we have had four very clear variants that have caused major havoc across the globe, and that each of those variants is a very different genetic makeup from the previous virus, but it's still a COVID virus, it's still a coronavirus. What we are seeing at the moment is a set of subvariants. We call them BA.1 and goes up to BA.5, subvariants that are still Omicron, but they have some differences in their genetic makeups, but not enough of a difference for them to be classified as a completely different variant. And they are not behaving, any of them are not behaving in a way that we would regard as being called a variant of concern. So they've not got a new name. They've just got a number, and they're an Omicron subvariant. At the moment in South Africa, we have three of those subvariants. Two have become very dominant. So we started with the BA.2, which took over from the original Omicron, but didn't last that long. And BA.4 and BA.5 are now the subvariants that are causing the infections that we are seeing. And without getting into too much technicalities, it's the way that the virus binds to our cells is different from the original Omicron. So it's able to escape some of our immunity, whether that immunity is created from vaccination or whether that immunity is created from previous infections. These two subvariants are able to get past that immunity and give you an infection again, notwithstanding the fact that you may have had exposure to the vaccine or an infection before. So we have seen a flare-up in the last few weeks. It's been as high as the reported number of diagnosed cases of 10,000 in a day. We know that not everybody goes for testing and that the real numbers are higher than that. But because it's a really consistent approach, we are able to watch the shape of the curve. Now, it's moved from province to province, and it has now the numbers have started to stabilize in this week. This is only Tuesday, so we're not sure if it'll go up again. But what we are seeing is at least a sustained flickering of an Omicron subvariant, which is causing people to be sick, it's causing hospitalizations, and it has caused some deaths. We're not sure what will happen after this, but we have to remain on high alert. So what we do know is we have to prevent transmission. It's the same message we've been giving before, to wear masks when we're in spaces with other people, especially indoors and where there's not a good ventilation, and to follow the regulations that have been provided regarding crowding and gatherings. And we also are appealing to people to go and vaccinate. We do know that vaccination is not 100% prevent you from getting an infection, but it is remarkably effective in preventing severe infections and death. And that's what we would really like to do, to stop people from getting sick. So what the department is doing is everything it can to continue to spread the message about vaccination, about the vaccination program, sustaining as many of the vaccination stations as possible, shifting vaccinations into the primary healthcare system of all the clinics and hospitals, and making sure that we are able to continue with the distribution of vaccines to as many sites as possible. Most provinces are also running outreach services and extending into their other services like HIV clinics and so forth. So that's the main story on COVID. We will have to see whether there's going to be a new variant. We are watching across the globe and seeing what other countries are doing as well. We're not in this alone. We're very much together with the rest of the world. Regarding the ComServes and the registrars, let me start with those. I think the Honourable Minister has outlined what the challenges are, and that is that as the budgets are reduced and some of the budget was shifted into caring for COVID, and there's increases in remuneration to individuals, there's less and less money available on the budget for employing people. So what happens is as posts become vacant, the provincial administrations are not able to fill those posts. We've been able for many years to top up provincial allocations using the various conditional grants. But we now have almost a perfect storm where we have the years of planning of producing additional medical graduates and other health professionals all happening at the same time. We have double the number of graduates in our own system in the country that we had 15 to 20 years ago. And we are also seeing the fruits of the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro program, where the graduates who went to study there are now all back in the country and or are starting to come back in large numbers and also need to do their internship and their community service thereafter. So, and many provinces at the same time were awarding bursaries to allow students from their provinces to go to study and now have to come back and pay the bursary. So all of these programs have produced more graduates at a time when we need them, but at a time when the economy is weak and we have reduction in budgets and unable to employ them. So as the Honourable Minister said, we've been able to get Treasury commitment for 3 years to enable us to employ all of the interns and community service doctors. Now at an individual level, there's a process of allocation that was embarked on several years ago that tries to make it absolutely fair, and it's a computer-generated allocation where the young graduates choose five options and then they get allocated by the computer to various posts, as the minister indicated, where how those posts are determined. And then there's a period where they're allowed to swap out for various personal reasons. And there are always a few people who, notwithstanding the program, find themselves unable to swap out or unwilling to swap out or don't want to go to the sites that are made available to them. And for a range of technical reasons around accommodation, family arrangements, and so on, don't take up their positions. We're very glad to say it's not a large number, but it does happen. The department works with the provinces to try and place those few remaining graduates so that they can get on with their outstanding commitments and complete their community service. There are some who then miss the boat and have to go to the next placement, which happens mid-year. We do have a portion of the budget that is kept aside to allow for mid-year, and those are for students who fail their exams and then rewrite, as well as these few who miss the placements in the year. So it's a fairly comprehensive and complicated program, and sometimes some of the students are not placed, and those are the ones that end up being in the headlines in the media. As far as registrars are concerned, this is a big worry for us, and it's a worry for the deans of the faculties and for us as professionals in the country. We need specialists to train our young doctors and also to deal with the complicated parts of the health service. So we need to train specialists, and those are the registrar posts. The challenge, of course, is when there is insufficient funding to maintain that number of posts, and that each hospital and province that has posts allocated starts to reduce those training posts, because the occupants of the other permanent posts are obviously in permanent employment and have to be paid. And that is a serious concern that we are addressing together with the South African Committee of Deans, and looking at in the context of the long-term planning in our human resources strategy. The challenge, of course, is that it takes many years to train these specialists. So if we cut back on those posts now, we will really only start to feel the pain in 4 to 6 years' time. And by then it's too late and we are unable to sustain our training program. So it is a concern and we are addressing it as best we can. Regarding the HPRS, the system has been implemented in 3,138 public health facilities. 3,104 of those are primary healthcare facilities, and then there are also 34 hospitals so far. We were in the process of rolling out to hospitals when COVID hit, so we have not implemented in more hospitals since the beginning of the COVID pandemic. But what happens is the system allows the department to generate one unique file number for each of us, for everybody who's got an ID or a passport or a number, whether it's an asylum seeker or a refugee number. And that becomes our master patient index. So we each have a number. Long term, the objective of this number is that we have started on the building of a single patient file where we will all have this personal portable record that belongs to us. And that means that when we move around in the health services between healthcare providers, whether they be private or public providers, our history will go with us. Our past laboratory tests, x-rays, the history of our medication and so on will go with us, and we will own that file. So it's a very important foundation of the building block to building a comprehensive health service. So we do bulk verifications of the patient records that we get against the Department of Home Affairs Population Register. And during this financial year, the department, in collaboration with the Home Affairs, will start the verification using fingerprint biometrics, so that even if you're unconscious when you're admitted to a hospital, we'll know it's you, and we'll be able to make sure we don't give you medications you shouldn't get, or we're able to pick up if you, for instance, are a diabetic and so on. So the HPRS's structure, the rules of the registration system are all implemented in compliance with the POPIA Act. The data is stored in what we call a level 3 security data center, which is owned by the Department of Health. And the whole system is designed that we as individuals own the records that will be attached to that number. So that is the way in which, if you recall from the National Health Insurance Bill, the intention is we will register at primary healthcare sites, and that will be our primary point at which, if we are not already on the system, we will register for the first time on the HPRS to get a number for our files. So it's a work in progress, and it will be the foundation of a far more efficient way of storing our records electronically. DJ, I think I've covered the questions you asked me to cover. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Crisp. Valerie, please.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable
Members. Out to the NHLS, and hence there's a reduction in our COE budget. There is also a small reduction in our COE budget on an annual basis, Chair, where National Treasury is reducing our compensation of employees budget, and that is to achieve the drive to manage the wage bill of government. And unfortunately, we have been on the receiving end of a reduction in our COE. In here, National Treasury, if there are any salary increases, National Treasury will make additional funds available, and therefore the COE budget might move towards the adjustments budget if we receive any additional funding. Then, Chair, on the question of the financial assistance and support to Gauteng, this is a very sensitive matter, Chair, because we do realize that Gauteng is in desperate need of additional funding. However, what we as the National Department of Health is doing, we have a support team. We have a unit called Provincial Support, where we are focusing in specific areas of challenges being experienced by the Gauteng Health Department. Then we also have a forum called the CFO, National CFO Health Forum, where all of the CFOs are also getting together, where we are putting our heads together and see how some of these aspects can be resolved internally. Alternatively, Chair, what we then do is we are making presentation to National Treasury in support of increased allocations. So within the availability of funds from National Treasury, we are also making appeals and budget bids to increase the budget allocation to the health sector, but more importantly to Gauteng. We do understand and realize that there are challenges. And then more in the further support to Gauteng, Chair, we also provide technical support to ensure that whatever support Gauteng requires, we can also provide that from a technical point of view. Unfortunately, we cannot take over the functions of Gauteng and we cannot dictate or direct. However, we assist with technical support and guidance and ensure that we can make sure that the services are not regressing in Gauteng. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Andre. I don't know if you explained the property payment.
DG, yes. That's the property payment versus the leases, where we don't own any properties. All payments that we are doing is for leased office accommodation, and we are making those payments to the Department of Public Works, who's the custodians of the contracts with the owners of the properties that we are leasing for office accommodation. Thank you, DG.
No, thank you very much. Before I hand over to the Minister, with the indulgence, Minister, Dr. Zugipinini, if she can just take the last question on acute malnutrition, and then I'll hand back to the Minister. Dr. Zugipinini, acute malnutrition.
DG, I just want to check also whether I might have missed, did anybody deal with the forensic chemistry laboratory backlogs? Maybe I missed it. And then the issue of security at hospitals, anybody venturing into that? I'm not sure whether it was covered. I'm just checking with you. But Dr. Pinini can carry on.
No, thank you very much, Minister. Dr. Pinini, and then I'll ask Dr. Chris to talk on forensic chemistry. It's now moved to NHLS. And then Mary need to talk about security. Dr. Pinini?
Good morning. Thank you, DG. I'll respond to the strategy to manage the severe acute malnutrition and moderate acute malnutrition. Firstly, the Department of Health, we promote breastfeeding, and also we promote good quality complementary feeding. We monitor growth on regular basis when they visit our facilities. We also identify and manage moderate acute malnutrition early. We also provide a package of other health services aimed at reducing incidence and severity of malnutrition. For instance, we give them vitamin A and also with the immunization. So with the children with severe acute malnutrition, we give them therapeutic feeds in our hospitals. And for those children with moderate acute malnutrition, we give a food parcels, but we don't have enough budget for this. So we are assisting them to apply for the child support grant from the Department of Social Development. The Department of Social Development then provides them with the grant and also with some food supplementation. As a Department of Health, we do not have budget for the moderate acute malnutrition. I'll end it there, DG. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Pinini. Dr. Chris? Dr. Nicholas Crisp on the forensic chemistry, which we have now transferred to NHLS.
Thank you, DG. So DG, what I can report is that there has been this transfer as has been reported of the function. It's not a usual process for the National Department to be running services. So the function of the forensic chemistry laboratories has been transferred. There are a number of backlogs. The particular concerns, well, there are three areas where there are backlogs. The one is in blood alcohol, the second is in toxicology, and the third is in food chemistry. So the National Health Laboratory Service is in the process of dealing with the equipment and the laboratories available with the blood alcohol and the food chemistry backlogs. But the backlogs in toxicology are still a significant problem, and there's a program in the National Health Laboratory Services to try and catch up, and there will be additional equipment required and so on. So that is not an immediately soluble challenge, but the other two, they should be able to resolve during the course of this year. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much. Valerie?
Thank you, DG. Yes, on the security consent. The National Department is really disturbed about the numerous or frequent incidents that happen at provincial level. They are highly unfortunate, and now we are losing lives of patients, unfortunately. However, just from the national point of view, we do have a safety and security forum where we share, we benchmark with the provincial heads of security. We have also encouraged them to follow the same route we followed by having an MOU, a memorandum of understanding and agreements with the SEPs. We have one at national level. We have shared it with the provinces, and we requested them to do the same at provincial level so that there's collaboration in trying to ensure the safety of our staff, and specifically at facility level. And we've developed norms and standards for implementation. The challenge is the implementation. And unfortunately, incidents like the one that happened in the Western Cape, you cannot plan for such a thing. However, most of the provinces have a hybrid model. They have in-house security. Some of them have the outsourced security. And it is expected that they should be able to manage the situation on site. That's the best that the National Department can assist with in terms of protocols, norms and standards, and implementation is at facility level, unfortunately. So, Minister, that's the best we can do. Thank you. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Merini. I'll hand back to my minister.
Well, thank you very much, DG and the team, honorable members. Just on the honorable chair, on the KZN disaster, fortunately, the damage to health facilities was not enormous. Our biggest kind of frustration was with the water interruption in a number of health facilities. Key amongst those, the very busy hospital, Prince Msheni Memorial Hospital in Umlazi, Eteguini, which for many days and weeks did not have bulk water supply because of the fact that the bulk pipeline to supplying the township had been washed away. So they were depending on tank water, and which was not very adequate at all for a hospital which just on an outpatient basis sees more than 1,000 patients per day. I mean, when we were there just after the Easter, they were on that particular day, they were attending to just over 1,500 outpatients visitors. So that's the size of activity. But the recent update is that the bulk water has been restored to the area and the hospital is back to normal flow of water. Others have been largely leaking roofs, a bit of damage on the roofs, some flooding, some clinics and health centers which have experienced some flooding. Many of those, in fact, there was only one in the Etekwini which was completely closed. Even that one, we believe that it shouldn't take long because it was largely flooding, which once the area has been cleaned up, we believe that it could be brought back to service. So there are quite a number across the province, Etekwini largely, the Ugu district, Mgungundlovu, the Ilembe district as well, where a number of facilities were damaged, not very extensively in the main area was, of course, Etekwini. And many of those were not brought to the level where they could not function. So we're working with the province to make sure that similarly as we have intervened with the Charlotte, that also our team working with our finance will be able to work with the province to see which funds from, as outlined in terms of the various funds on infrastructure of conditional grant, to work with them to see where certain adjustments can be made. So those interventions are well in place. Let me leave it there, Honorable Chair. I think we have attempted to deal as directly as possible with the questions which have been raised. Back to you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister Bachelor. Thank you, DG Buthelezi and his team members. It is now exactly 4:04. If there is any members who's got follow-up questions, I think you must put it in writing to the department. You can send it to Marcel because we are running out of time. Let me then take the opportunity, Minister, to really show our appreciation for coming in our committee this morning. Also convey our thanks to the DM. We are really we really appreciate the work that you, the DM and the department is doing and has done during this pandemic. For us as the Select Committee, it is always an honor and a privilege to work with your department. Whenever there's problems in the provinces, we can really contact you, DM, or Dr. Buthelezi, and we will really get the assistance from you. Wishing you well, Minister, in your further endeavors, and thank you very much for your commitment to make life better for all South Africans.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Can I just appeal to the members to continue to help us to encourage South Africans to vaccinate? As we can see, the various changes of the virus is still there. So in our constituencies everywhere, please, let's work together to encourage more South Africans to vaccinate. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. We will definitely do that. And also, DG, thank you very much for always being there when we need to knock on your door. With that few words, I excuse you, Minister. Continue with the good work. Go well, you and your team.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chair. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Chair and members. Bye.
Thank you, member.
Members, thank you for this morning, for availing yourself so that we can have this meeting earlier. Now we must do what we must do. Marcel, are you ready?
Yes, Chairperson, I have now shared the program. I'm hoping you can all see it.
Yes.
Okay, Chair. Again, good afternoon. It's almost afternoon. Good afternoon, members and staff. This is our program for the second term. We have now already started with our program. So I'll just quickly run through the first couple of meetings that we've already done. The first meeting for the 19th of April was postponed. There was a clash with the NCLP program. We then met on the 26th of April with the Department of Social Development on the APP and budget. The 3rd of May, we had a meeting by with the NDA as well as SASA regarding their APPs. Moving on, Chair, the meeting with the Department of Women was postponed. There was a WIPS international trip. We didn't have enough members to meet, and that's why our meeting was postponed. That was last week. We have, in fact, rescheduled that meeting. Today's meeting was the meeting with the Department of Health. Our meeting with the Department of Women, we've rescheduled to the 24th of May. I have sent that invitation. Then, Chairperson, the 31st of May, we'll do an informal briefing by the Department of Social Development on the Children's Amendment Bill. Chair, the reason why the briefing is informal is because the bill has not been referred to us yet. So for that reason, we are only getting some information on the bill to prepare us for when the bill is referred to us. Then Tuesday, the 7th of June, Chair, we have an informal briefing by the Department of Health on the National Health Insurance Bill. Also, that bill has not yet been referred to us, Chair, so that's why it's an informal briefing, just to get some information out of that bill. Further than that, Tuesday, the 14th of June, we scheduled the briefing on the Children's Amendment Bill, which will be a formal briefing. Hopefully by then, Chair, we would have the bill referred to our committee. And then concluding our second term, Chair, would be the meeting for the 21st of June, where we will have a briefing by the Department of Health, which is the formal briefing on the National Health Insurance Bill, pending that that bill is referred to our committee at that point. Chair, we have a constituency period from the 27th of June, but we have factored in a study tour as agreed by the committee. It will be a joint study tour and a country visited to be the Republic of Korea. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, members. There you have it. Sorry for that. Members, there is our program in front of you. Is there any questions before adopting the program? I don't see any hands. Can we have a move? Yes, Kamri. Who's there?
Ndongeni.
Okay, Member Dongeni, you can continue.
On the 2nd of July, ne? About the study tour. When you talk about the joint international study tour, we'll talk about the NA and select committee, ne?
No. We talk about the select committee of health and social services and education.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks, Chair.
Okay. Can we have a mover for the adoption of the program?
Dungeni.
Thank you, Member Dungeni. Is there a seconder?
Bacha, Chair.
Thank you, Member Bacha. Marcel, do we have minutes?
Trying to unmute. No, Chairperson, we won't do minutes today. I thought our time would be too short. We'll defer those minutes for next week. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, get yourself ready and into action. We're going to South Korea. Unfortunately, my passport has burned out in Parliament myself. Please hurry up with that process. otherwise, members, thank you very much for this morning. It was really very a significant meeting to get all that briefings and reports from the Department of Health. I think we can all go for lunch and we'll see each other at 2 o'clock in the NCO. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Chair. Bye. Bye.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye.
Recordings.